This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Danger! Danger!
It's not a lineup, it's not an army, it's not a stable, and it's not a family. It's an alliance of businessmen.
Take it right.
Place to Be Nation, you're listening to the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling Podcast, featuring a different way to look at and debate the history of wrestling. And now, your co-host, the PTBN PWO two-man power trip, JT and Will.
The Dangerous Alliance would rather die than surrender to you.
Hey, Place to Be Nation, welcome to another great episode of the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling Podcast. I'm your co-host, JT, coming at you here live on this Wednesday evening, and joining me, as always, my partner in the Dangerous Alliance, and that is good old Will from Texas. Will, how you doing?
Man, I'm doing great.
And, of course, always with us as well is Dan McGinn. Dan, how are you?
I'm doing great, guys. It's coming up a long weekend. Can't complain about that. Well rested.
So that's good to hear. And of course, it's been a long 2 weeks. I feel like it's just, you know, years go by between when we do these shows. We look forward to them so much. And I'm all verklempt here because a wild night of baseball just went down for game one with this Rangers Blue Jays mess. But we're gonna tamper things down. We're going to rev down for a minute and rev back up because, of course, here on the DAW podcast, we play three different challenges throughout the night. Dan McGinn reaches deep into his sack of fun, and he pulls them out and issues a challenge. We have three of those. They last 30 minutes each, and then we do some mail at the end. So, Mr. McGinn, open that sack up, and why don't you tell us what is challenge number one?
Fellas, your first fall, we're going to finally reach our conclusion to the Game of Thrones tournament, and who knows, it might be just as controversial as the actual finale to Game of Thrones.
Entirely possible. I don't know how controversial that was, because I've never seen it. I assume it was, if you're comparing it to
was.
This. Okay.
It was.
All right, a lot of controversy here tonight. So why don't we dive right in then? So premise of this challenge was we picked 16 title changes from throughout wrestling history, from various territories and promotions. Threw them in a bag. Dan randomly matched them up into a tournament bracket. Last week, we went through round one. It took us a while because we debated in-depth all the bouts. And then here we are with eight remaining, and we're going to go through the final three rounds tonight. So, Dan, what we'll do is we can dive right in, and as you announce the matchup, you can announce who they also, what match that match defeated in round one. So why don't you kick us off here with the conclusion of the Game of Thrones.
All right, in our first matchup, it will be Jerry the King Lawler and Kurt Hennig in a battle from Memphis, AWA title from 1988 in May, and that will take on Rock versus Mankind from January of 1999 on Raw. The Lawler-Hennig match that defeated Hulk Hogan and Ric Flair from Bash at the Beach 1994, and Rock and Mankind actually beat up on Brock and Cena from SummerSlam 2014.
All right, well, I know we talked about these matches in pretty in-depth the first time around, and I'm not confident because I know Will and his Jerry Lawler fandom are going to not let this one go down easily. So, Will, I'll defer to you. Go ahead and tell us why. Not only is this just a great match, but why it deserves to be in the final four of this tournament.
Okay, well, it is a great match. It's not Jerry Lawler's greatest match versus Kurt Hennig. I think they had another match of the year contender for 1988. In the AWA, but this is not that match. However, as a longtime Memphis fan, what this it really is the culmination of Jerry Lawler's quest to be a world champion over a decade. He had had hour-long draws with Harley Race in the 70s, fought Jack Briscoe and Terry Funk in the 70s. Dory Funk was an opponent of his in the early 80s. I don't know if he fought him in the 70s. I'd have to look. He fought Nick Bockwinkel several times, had a very memorable, famous feud in 1982. In fact, one of the great moments from that feud was when Bockwinkel accused Jerry Lawler of being able to do nothing but punch. So they had a match where every time someone threw a punch, they would get fined $100. And so Lawler, quote unquote, got fined a lot in that match. But, you know, Lawler had always challenged for the world titles. He was the big gun in Memphis. And finally, after a decade, and saying, you know, if I don't win this thing, I'm just going to retire. You know, I wasn't meant to be world champion. He wins it. So from an emotional standpoint and a cumulative standpoint, I think Lawler versus Hennig gets it. Now, let me explain why. Rock versus Mankind was a very memorable moment. It's famous for, you know, Tony Schiavone on Nitro announcing the title change ahead of time and saying that it won't put butts in the seats. That was the same night as the famous finger poke of doom with Hogan and Nash, with Goldberg stuck in a jail, you know, all night. But the problem I have with The Rock versus Mankind, whereas Lawler versus Hennig finally feels like a cumulative effect over a decade, is that we heard about Mankind's quest in his book after this match took place. But at the time, it was a shock. It was different. It was the Attitude Era. You know, anything can happen on any Monday night. But at the time, it just really felt like another Vince Russo, Vince McMahon, let's change the title randomly. And as it stood, the title didn't stay on Mankind very long. And, you know, he never held, you know, how many times did he win the belt? Two or three?
He won it two more times. Can I just ask, how long did Lawler hold it when he won it this time?
Oh, he held it up until I want to say he left the promotion when Vern Gagne stiffed him at Super Clash. And then after that, I think he still billed himself as the unified world champion.
Okay.
So quite a while. But, you know, they had the whole falling out at Super Clash when Vern Gagne decided he wasn't going to pay anybody for performing on the show. So
I don't know why they went out of business.
Yeah, I have no reason, you know. But, you know, to me, it's all about personal investment and personal emotion. If you're a Mankind fan, no doubt, man, this is a big, big deal. You know, you were there live, JR. I wasn't live there for the Lawler-Hennig match. But the problem I have with a lot of the Attitude Era is a lot of the memorable moments, a lot of the things, either they've been beaten, we've been beaten over the head with them so many times that they lose their specialness.
Yeah, but I feel like in a format
with
this,
hold on.
All right, go ahead.
Yeah, or in the era, the Attitude Era, every week it was like, oh, let's try something to bump the rating. You know, let's try something else to do this. So we'd have random title changes over and over again. And you're never going to convince me that a meaningless Raw match, and it is kind of meaningless, it's Raw, will ever defeat Jerry Lawler's 10-year reign or 10-year chase to become world champion. Now, having said that, you know, no, I mean, it's a great moment. It's a great way for Mick Foley to cap off his first book. But I don't have any personal investment in Mick Foley anymore. The Rock, that star's faded for me. Just kind of like the entire Attitude Era, the whole thing has kind of faded for me. I don't have any really personal investment in it. I have more personal investment in WCW when the NWO was hot than I do with anything that was going on in the company. And I know you come from a different completely place, so I'll let you say your piece.
Well, I mean, yeah, so I think a credit to the match is that in a time where there were so many title changes and so many moments and things happening, I think it still stands out above those. Like, if you still ask, what are the greatest title changes in the Monday Night Wars, you know, Raw, Nitro, whatever, I think you get Hogan, Goldberg, and you get Foley, Rock. I mean, I think it's still remembered greatly, and I think that helps its cause, that it's not just lost to me in time, that it's remembered. Everyone knows the date. Everyone knows what happened. You can recall the final segments. You know, if I said, tell me about the match where Steve Austin beat Kurt Angle and 0-1 on Raw to win the title. Like, you probably remember bits of it, but not a lot. Like, to me, this was like, okay, I remember that whole finishing sequence. I remember the crowd pop when Austin comes out. I remember Cole screaming and Foley doing the lap around the ring. So, I mean, I think it stands a test of time in that regard. Also, I don't think it's completely fair to say we didn't know Foley's journey until the book came out. I mean, I think anyone who was an inside knowledgeable wrestling fan from the early 90s on knew this guy's career. He, you know, they watched him as Cactus Jack killing himself and getting run out of there, has an awesome run promo-wise in ECW, goes to Japan and kills himself, and then comes in as Mankind. He's kind of this weird character, but he gets over fighting The Undertaker. Has a, you know, the fun run as Dude Love with Steve Austin, back as Mankind, Hell in a Cell, like all the stuff he's been through. And by the end, the beauty of it is by the end of 98, you start to think, all right, this guy's just going to be the lovable loser. They screw him at Survivor Series. Like, he's probably never going to win. They're just building up for Austin to win at Mania. And then out of nowhere, and to me, this is what makes it so great that it came out of nowhere, because it gave you that feeling that, and I don't want to, all right, so it comes out of nowhere from a booking standpoint, but it makes perfect sense. So it's not like some random guy just pulling an upset on Raw to win the title and it made no sense. Like, the whole story made perfect sense the way
Vince
treated him.
No, I get
him.
That. Yeah.
So to me, the fact that the moment comes out of left field, I mean, even being there until the final moments of the match, you don't ever expect Foley to actually win. So to me, that adds so much to the moment that it just, you lose it. I mean, like I compared it to last time, it's almost like being a fan of a team where, oh my God, they're on this crazy run, or you're, you know, it's a college basketball team and you're in the tournament and all of a sudden you knock off a, you know, one of the favorites. It's like, you don't really believe it's happening until it happens. And you just like, yeah, this raw emotion of what's going down. And I'm sure Lawler fans felt the same way. And I don't want to completely pull this card out, but to me, I think part of it too was, yeah, that Lawler story was tremendous, but it also happened within the confinements of that territory. Whereas Mick Foley was a worldwide known character that many people knew his story, and how many millions saw that match that night to see it. And I'm not saying that makes a big difference, but when we're to this point, I think we got to nitpick a little bit. So I'd throw that out there to say, you know, I think the Lawler story is great. He 10 years, he finally wins the big one, but how big was it in the grand scheme of things? Sure, the Foley thing was a throwaway reign, but that was also the WWF title during the height of their hottest period with, you know, millions and millions of viewers, versus where Jerry Lawler won his. And I loved the Lawler-Hennig match when I watched it. So
let me respond to that. Yeah. For me, I always watch wrestling as a party of one. I don't care what the other millions of people, because by this time, early 99, I was done. If I hadn't discovered the internet and wrestling history on the internet, we wouldn't be having this podcast today, because by late 98, I was so fed up with WCW booking. I was just done with WCW. WWF for me was so hard to watch in this period. The corporation, the ministry, all of this stuff, it meant nothing to me. I mean, when wrestling reached its heights, kind of at the same time Jerry Springer reached its heights, to me it was garbage TV. Granted, garbage TV is popular. You know what I mean? But it wasn't what made me a wrestling fan. I mean, I understand that, you know, it was a big deal. Millions of people watched it. But by this time, I was tapping out on modern wrestling, you know, because I was so sick of both major companies at the time. And for me, you know, when I watch these matches, I watch them in hindsight, you know, because like I said, I out of this. So I actually saw the Rock Mankind title change later on. I didn't watch it live. Then the Lawler-Hennig match, I didn't even know existed in 1988 except for an aftermath.
Right.
You know? So it's one of those things where I look, and that to me, what the millions of people do, I mean, you know, millions of people love Hulk Hogan, right? No one's going to put him on their greatest wrestler of all time list, you know?
No, I know.
So to me, that's irrelevant. That's just an irrelevant point. But having said that, you know, now if we're going to call both of these kind of the journey of two men, right? And that's what this is, right? It's the journey of Foley. It's the journey of Lawler. They accumulate in a world title win. They're both special moments. I mean, you saw how they reacted in Memphis. You saw the kind of the grandeur that was going on in Memphis at the time, you know, which was completely, it was an 80s style. It was local. It was territory. That's what, you know, the sign of the times were. We saw Rock Mankind. I mean, dude, that was a huge pop for Mankind. I mean, it was just electric. I agree with that. But now I'm going to have to come down, which was the better match. And to me, Lawler-Hennig is the better match going away. And that's why I'm going to pick that one.
So I think you mistook my point just a little bit. So my whole point about more, like, it meaning more is how you kind of threw away the, well, he won it on Raw and there was a million title changes and Lawler's meant more. To me, my point was, I think Foley's meant more because it was a more high-profile title. It wasn't confined within that territory, that region, and sure, it's a 10-year battle, but who knew outside of that? Like you said, you didn't even know because it was, you know, unless you were in the aftermath, but, you know, where Foley won it and what he won, to me, offsets the fact that maybe Lawler's journey was more emotional for whatever reason. So that was just my counter to that point, but we got to move because we still got a lot more to get through tonight.
Well, I think we'll probably be a lot more agreeable on other matches. So.
I think so, and I mean, you know, Lawler's your all-time favorite. You know, I don't
number
think,
one and the best.
Yeah, Mick or Rock are neither my favorite of all time, so I'm not as passionate from that point of view. It's, you know, more because I was there, and I really believe it's one of the greatest moments of that era, just because of what it meant. And at the time before, a guy like Foley got completely overexposed and beaten into the ground. At that time, he was still really beloved, and it still meant a lot when he won that belt because it was such an underdog story. And it was a guy that had been, everyone hated WCW for what they did, right? They held everyone down. They were assholes. And sure, they had great television or, you know, great matches here and there and some great storylines. But by that point, WWF was the pure underdog in the Monday Night Wars. And to see a guy like Foley get his due was like, yeah, screw you, WCW. You never would have done this for Mick Foley. And here it is. So it was partially that too, that it meant so much during that war. During that period, it was epitomized what the battle was. But I think we're at a stalemate, so we're going to put all the pressure on Dan McGinn here tonight to step in and break the tie on this one.
God, I hate you guys. I think I'd rather be Ned Stark right now and get my head lopped off rather than decide this one. But
that means nothing to me.
To the people who haven't watched Game of Thrones yet, they're probably hating me right now too. Gosh, guys, I'm sorry. I mean, it's really tough. Rock Mankind meant so much to two different companies, really. I mean, you had the whole, it was such a historical night on both fronts, mm-hmm. on WWF side and WCW side. I mean, people still talk about that. And we're talking about
hold on, Dan. I want to try and sway you. If we're going purely on historical importance, we should have never gotten rid of Hulk Hogan versus Iron Sheik in the first round.
Well, no,
And it got beaten by a match that simply was a better title change.
Sure, but I think when everything's down the line, like I think Lawler Hennig was great, but I think you can pick stuff. Like I said, the Fargo stuff annoyed me. I thought the finish to Rock Mankind was much better than the finish to Lawler Hennig. I mean, the overall match was better, but I think these are closer than those were. So to me, I think now we have to start like nitpicking some of the stuff.
I'm sorry. I thought I was talking to Dan again.
Well, I get to help sway Dan too.
I want to like apply for another show after this. I don't know. I mean, you both make great arguments. I'm probably, one of you guys is going to hate me, so I might as well go with the person who's farthest away from me geographically. And, I don't want to do that either. There's no other way. Can we just say this is a draw and then
eliminate
the next
both? No. We can do that. All right, listen, this is what we're going
to
do, okay?
And to be fair, Lawler versus Hennig is not my number one match for this tournament.
Listen,
so.
This is what we're going to do because we're running on time already. We're not going to get through more than this round tonight. So why don't we put this one up to a vote on PlaySimulation.com, PWO. You guys weigh in and vote. Who should advance in this one?
Oh, come on.
No?
Dude, like 5% of the fucking population cares about Memphis. Yeah, I know. It's number four. I don't even care about the damn jar anymore.
Well, I said PWO can vote. They would definitely go. There's a lot of enlightened people in there, like your Lawler Hennig match.
That's not our wheelhouse.
Flip a coin or something. I tried.
All right.
But I think you should look at me like King Solomon. I offered, you know. Have the baby cut in half.
We're going Lawler Hennig in this matchup.
Oh, what a pussy you are. All right, what's match number two?
It's fellow Game of Thrones fan.
Oh, he's such a pussy. He's more afraid of you than he is me. That's the problem. Go ahead.
Match number two is Ric Flair, the Nature Boy, taking on Ron Garvin from Starrcade 1990 or 1987. Excuse me.
That would not be a very good match in 1997. That'd
be horrible in 1997. Yeah, good call. That match will take on Stone Cold Steve Austin versus Shawn Michaels, the Heartbreak Kid, of course, from WrestleMania 14. Mm-hmm. Flair and Garvin, they beat Briscoe and Steen from Supercard of Honor in 2013. And Austin Michaels defeated Sting versus Vader from Great American Bash 1992.
This one's hard, JR. And the reason it's hard is because I just watched Flair versus Garvin Sunday morning before I did a show with Parv arguing about Ric Flair is the greatest of all time. And that's a great title match. I mean, it is a legitimately great title match. Austin versus Michaels, I think, was a very good title match, and it set off Austin. So I would personally, just as a match, I would pick Flair Garvin, but if you and Dan picked Austin versus Michaels, I wouldn't like fight you. I'm not going to like fall on the, you know, the spike here to
how honorable
Garvin.
How honorable of you to threaten Dan last time to now all of a sudden, oh, okay.
I didn't threaten him. I didn't threaten him. Dan, did I threaten you?
He sounded threatened. Listen to him.
Check is in the
voice
mail.
Voice was wobbling.
You got another F in the F jar for me, JR.
I know. I can't wait for that subscription to NWA, whatever you're going to send me. That's going to be great.
You said you're going to get it. You haven't purchased a bit in this contest.
I'll take DVDs, too, if you get DVDs.
Oh, God.
Love me DVDs.
Oh, you get nothing. As long as I'm involved.
Which match would you pick, JR?
Yeah, I'd go Austin Michaels. I wish these two were split and the last, facing off with the last two. But, Flair Garvin's good, but I think for what Austin Michaels meant, it was a real transition of the era we just talked about. And we had that short list of like really memorable title reigns during that era, and Austin Michaels is right up there. The real transition of the end of the Michaels Bret Hart run and then officially handing the torch to Austin and the WWF taking control of the Monday Night Wars like 2 weeks later and never looked back. So, and it's a good enough match, especially when you factor in Michaels back and what he went through just to gut his way through that match. You have Tyson's involvement, which was huge. So I think overall it's definitely worth moving on.
Dan?
I agree. Stone Cold, Shawn Michaels, boom. Move it along.
All right. What's next?
Next up, the modern day warrior, Kerry Von Erich against Ric Flair. This is from 1984 NWA title on the line. That will take on the classic Goldberg versus Hogan from Monday Nitro in 1998. Now, Kerry and Flair defeated Hogan and Sheik. We referenced that before. And Goldberg and Hogan defeated Diesel and Bret Hart from Survivor Series 1995.
What do we got for time, Dan?
You have 12 minutes on the dot.
Okay, so I think we're going to finish this round. We'll save the final four for next time. That's official now at this point. So,
I don't think so.
You think we can do it?
Oh, yeah.
All right. So I shouldn't hesitate too much. I think this is like... It like sums up the first two ones we've had to go through, right? We have the huge moment, the biggest of all the title change moments we've talked about from the Attitude Era, and we have, this classic match from Japan in the 80s for the NWA title. Pure raw emotion. You got Goldberg, Hogan. Not much of a match, but the moment was monumental. And then Flair Von Erich, really great match too, and the best out of three stipulation, the crowd. And Japan was really into it. One of the best Von Erich match I've seen, Kerry Von Erich. I really liked it. So what do you think, Will? I'll kind of more defer to you since the Von Erich match is more on your
mind. Here's the thing, man. I'm going to stay consistent in that Goldberg versus Hogan was monumental. But look at what it led to. It led to the cattle prod at Starrcade, and it led to the finger poke of doom on January 4th, 1999. To me, that's ultimately what Goldberg's run amounts to. They shit the bed on the streak. What made Goldberg so special was that it was kind of an organic rise, and WCW capitalized on it. And then once he became world champion, it's like they forgot what brought Goldberg to the dance, and it just really bothers me. He had the great DDP match, but unfortunately that wasn't a title change and isn't eligible for this tournament, or I would have picked that hands down. But I'm going to stay consistent and say that I think that eventually the quality of the match has to win out over the actual moment, and so I'm going to pick Von Erich versus Flair.
Yeah, I think what makes it tough is the qualification for the tournament was that we were picking title changes. So on some level, that was going to weigh in heavily. Now, I don't disagree with you. At some point, that match quality is going to kick in. I don't know. It's tough because I'm really mad that Austin Michaels didn't get one of these or one of the first matches we talked about. It's annoying me.
Here's the precedent I'm using. I'm using Hogan versus Sheik. That kicked off Hulkamania, the biggest momentum changer in wrestling. Austin drew more money, but, count inflation, all that, whatever. But Hogan versus Sheik got eliminated because it really wasn't that much of a match.
Right. I think Hogan Goldberg is more of a match than that, right?
Yeah. And it's a funner match, too. But at the same time, Hogan versus Sheik meant more. And we already eliminated that. And that's what I'm using as the precedent to make my choices from here on out.
Dan, I'm not asking you to break the tie, but I'm asking you to weigh in with your thoughts. Does that make it easier for you?
Yeah, I like Will's point about the fact that the Goldberg thing when you saw it as it was in a vacuum, it was a great moment, but then it didn't lead to much of anything. I think the Kerry Von Erich, Ric Flair, I mean, we're starting to see like the start of that in our series on the adventure that we're going on about like the bitter feud with, you know, Kerry and Rick and just in that sort of thing. You know, I guess in a way the Goldberg thing, if Goldberg actually went on and it became Goldberg Mania, kind of like Hulk, maybe.
Hang on. So why are we comparing Goldberg to Hogan in this situation? Because these aren't the matches. So Von Erich, what did his reign amount to?
Von Erich's reign was not so much about the reign itself. It was about the win because...
Well, so remember, isn't that Goldberg?
Hold on. No. Goldberg's win does not compare to Kerry actually winning the belt for his dead brother. A huge, huge difference there.
Goldberg won it for all the pets he adopted.
You know, but... Yeah, there you go. So for me, Kerry as champion was more about the tribute to David than it was. And you know, but Flair's the man in the 80s. I mean, Flair... You know, was the only one who was able to actually kind of run against Hogan, right? That was why it was such a shame WCW or the NWA never turned Flair face when they hit Cable, because I think Flair would have been the perfect alternative to run opposition against Hogan, because people wanted to cheer for him, but he wanted to be a heel, and Dusty definitely didn't want him to top his babyface run. So to me, Von Erich Flair is going to win on match quality alone.
All right. David dying sealed it for me, so we'll go with that. Go ahead.
All right, so our last match of this particular round sees CM Punk and John Cena from Money in the Bank 2011, and that will take on Brock Lesnar versus Eddie Guerrero from No Way Out in 2004. Punk Cena defeated Steamboat Flair from 1989, and Brock Eddie beat Rock and Jericho from 2001.
I would go Cena Punk. You know, I think they're both pretty close match quality wise. I know Eddie's was the culmination, his story. But if we want to talk about reigns that just went nowhere afterwards, I mean, Eddie's did. But again, that one was more about the journey. Cena Punk had so much more emotion behind it. How many people just hated Cena and were rooting for Punk and what that did for the company. And it really blazed the trail for a lot of guys that are around today now and doing well. And that, like, I think we talked about this last time, but who knows where they would have been if Punk didn't go on this run in 2011. And look at what the company's doing now with NXT and these relationships with independents and Japan and everything else. Does that any of that ever get to this point without Punk kind of starting that trail in 2011? So that's my pick.
Now, I'm actually agreeing with you, and here's why. Because both actual world title reigns meant nothing, right? I mean, Punk, remember, Punk didn't actually go to the independents and defend the belt. He didn't go to Japan and defend the belt like he promised he would. WWE forced him into a meaningless match with Cena at SummerSlam, only for Punk to lose at the end with a Kevin Nash powerbomb, and what was a horrible feud with Triple H and Kevin Nash that went nowhere. And it wasn't until Punk regained the belt that, you know, he had his really long reign. Sorry about that. Sorry, I had a kid interrupt me. I was about to slap a kid. Anyway, don't call the authorities on me. Anyway. But look at Eddie versus Brock. Eddie wins the belt. Huge moment for smart fans everywhere. And he couldn't take the pressure, man. Take the pressure, and he had to drop it to JBL, who really didn't become a hell of a worker until after, you know, he had been champion. Like, because he really – JBL, I think, 2005, 2006-ish, was really a good wrestler. But it took those matches with Eddie to kind of even, like, get him there. But Punk Cena, just the entire – environment, atmosphere, the pipe bomb, everything, like you mentioned, you know, with where WWE's at now, Daniel Bryan becoming world champion, all of that happens because of CM Punk becoming popular against the wishes of the company itself.
Okay. I think so, we're good with Punk Cena. What do we get for time, Dan?
A shade over 4 minutes to go.
What do you think, Will? That'd be about a minute per match here.
Well, no, we only have two more matches.
And then we got to do the final.
Oh, shit, yeah, okay. Yeah, we can do it. Okay. Rock, Mankind. So what are we doing? Lawler versus Hennig versus Austin versus Michaels?
Yeah.
I can't deny Austin versus Michaels meant more, but I'm going to go match quality. I'm going to go Lawler Hennig.
Again, I'm not going to fight you on this one. I mean, Austin Michaels got here. I think they had a soft path. I think they would have lost to like eight of the other matches that have already lost in this tournament. I think it had a respectable showing. So I'll give you your Lawler Hennig, even though it should have lost last round.
All right. The next match is Hennig versus, Kerry Von Erich versus Ric Flair versus CM Punk, John Cena. Ooh.
I got to go Punk Cena on this one. I mean, I know you get David's death, but for what Punk's win ushered in and just the overall quality of that match is just awesome. Like, I mean, it surprised everyone because everyone was excited for it, thinking Punk may win and take the belt. And then the match was like almost five stars, if not. You know what I mean? Like, it's like they delivered this awesome match. And I know many people knew Cena could do it, but he'd kind of been in a little bit of a lull when it came to classic matches. Like, he had awesome 07 and okay, after the injury, 08, 09, 10, like, he was kind of scuffling a little bit in big matches.
I'm actually going to agree with you. And for one night, it was like one of the most special nights that I've experienced as a wrestling fan. I mean, just watching the match with Chris Hero at my house, both avoiding spoilers, having the Punk, you know, post the picture of the belt in his refrigerator just for one night, and then just waiting to happen, to see what was going to happen on Raw. I mean, it was a very magical moment. I'm actually going to say that, and that would be the finals of Lawler versus Hennig versus Punk and Cena. And I don't think we're going to argue on this, JR. I'm going to go Punk Cena on this one, too.
I'm going Lawler. No, yeah, I think you have to go Punk Cena for everything you mentioned. and just the whole package of the pipe bomb. And what's so big about it is, I mean, you never expected that. Punk was dead in the water. He had, you know, Cena was coming off a feud with R-Truth, and Punk was doing, what was the Ray? Was the Ray stuff leading up to this? He was feuding with Kane. I don't know.
He was a member of Nexus.
That's right. Yeah, the Nexus stuff. That's right.
I mean, he was Ray in was no man's land.
Yeah, he was just dead in the water. And everyone thought he was leaving. I mean, his contract was coming up, and everyone was just like, all right, well, Punk's going to go back to the Indies and do his thing, and we're stuck. And then all of a sudden, you know, he sits down on the stage and just unreal.
I talked to him that week, JR. He didn't know, you know. I mean, and then talking to friends of his, you know, around that time, they were like, man, he's really agonizing over it, you know. And in the end, I mean, the WWE basically promised him the world, made him an offer he couldn't refuse. And he honestly thought things were going to change. You know, he honestly thought that he could make a difference. And, you know, for a guy who's as passionate as he was about, like, his character and about really implementing this change that we're finally seeing, he was so bummed out. You know, I mean, it was kind of sad just communicating with him in those last few months he was in the company, because he wanted no part of that place. And they really kind of ripped out his soul, you know, when it came to being a wrestling fan. So there's a real tragedy in this too. And, you know, the UFC chapter, we'll wait and see.
Well, he can always say he won the first ever Dangerous Alliance Wrestling Podcast Game of Thrones tournament, because CM Punk versus John Cena, Money in the Bank 2011, is our champion, outlasted 15 other great title changes. And this is a really fun challenge. So we're going to have to do this again shortly, when we'll do a different type of match. But Dan,
or a different title.
Yes. Yeah, different title, or even different, like, we can do gimmick matches, cage match, you know, anything. We could open it wide open. So
yeah, I liked it.
How are we looking, Dan?
Well, and we timed out perfectly, guys. Time is up.
All right. You're right. All right. So why don't we go ahead? We'll take a break here on this, of course, Halloween-themed Dangerous Alliance Wrestling Podcast. And maybe that is a tease, but maybe it's not. We'll be right back, and we'll find out what challenge number two is.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com. The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place Me Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to the Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes at placetobenation.com. You can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, home of great interviews and our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. If you need your fix of current wrestling talk, we have plenty of options for you, including Main Event, which features a roundtable discussion led by PTBN analysts and special guests, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows, including immediate feedback and discussion for WWE, NXT, Ring of Honor, and New Japan Super Shows. Also, be sure to relive wrestling's past with Graham Cawthon's excellent exclusive History of Wrestling podcast, Phil Schneider's Digging in the Crates, and our monthly pay-per-view rewind roundtable series led by Ben Morse. And join Pro Wrestling Only's Will and I on the Dangerous Alliance podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. Sports fans have plenty to enjoy as well. We feature the Sports Evolution Mega Show with Scott, Dr. G, Cowboy, and Cowboy Sr., The Kings of Sport, led by Live Audio Wrestling's godfather Nate Milton, as well as the NBA Team Podcast, which takes a year-round deep dive into pro hoops, and the TJ McClune Show, featuring great guests from around the world of sports journalism. PTBN also proudly features the Richard the Mailman Podcast, specializing in the world of TV, thought leadership, anger, and irreverence. As mentioned, all these shows available on PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. PTBN also is the home to tremendous in-depth features on pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, Scott Keats, RSPWFAQ.com blog, and Piledriver.net. Place to be Nation, welcome back to the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling Podcast. One challenge is in the books. Hope you enjoyed hearing all about the shows offered on the Place to Be podcast feed on iTunes. And as I mentioned before, we love our holiday themes. It is, of course, October, and it's our only show in October. We'll talk about that in a little bit. So we figured we'd go all out, get some Halloween music cranking on and off throughout the show. And something tells me, now that the Game of Thrones is behind us, that we may be delving into some holiday-themed games. So, Dan McGinn, why don't you tell us what challenge number two is?
Boys and girls of every age, wouldn't you like to see something strange?
Come with us and you will see.
Well, I just removed my fangs to tell you guys that we're going to build a card. And, of course, it's very appropriate we build Halloween Havoc.
So, Halloween Havoc. Now, we did this before the Great American Bash. It got a little convoluted because, of course, we had two different cards we were building. We had the day one and the day two. But here we go for Halloween Havoc. There's only 12 cards in Halloween Havoc history, 1989 through 2000. We're going to do a minimum of 10 matches, maximum of 12. So we'll see how we do. We can only pick one match from each show. We can only use each title one time, the World, the U.S., the TV, the Tag, and the Cruiserweight. So we'll have five title matches, in theory, on this card. We'll go through year by year. We'll pick some nominees, toss them into the bucket, and then we'll break it down from there. So, Will, why don't we start in 1989 from Philadelphia.
Okay.
Does anything, and this, of course, is the first one. So does anything stand out to you as a match that must be included in our list?
Well, we definitely have a couple of contenders. Now, one of the hot feuds in 89 for the tag teams, it's not a tag title match, but these are two teams that were really popular around the time, and that's Doom versus Rick and Scott Steiner.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I have that one, and that's when a woman was dating Rick, and then she turned on him and went with Doom. And I don't know the exact timeline, but it's around
masks,
that.
Right here.
I believe so, yeah. So We at least need to consider them because they're kind of WCW NWA canon. You know, they're two teams like the Steiners I associate with NWA WCW,
and Doom was for really the titles, popular. So that's good too.
It's not for a title, so that makes it easy. Now, something that needs to be a contender for the mm-hmm. U.S. title is Lex Luger versus Brian Pillman. Lex Luger, a lot of people don't realize this, actually from like 87 to 1990 ish. Really good wrestler.
Mm-hmm.
Really good. Probably stopped being a good wrestler when he went to WWF, just like so many other wrestlers.
This match was fantastic. Pillman was fairly newer to the promotion when he came in, like 88, so probably within his first year here in the promotion, challenging Luger for the U.S. title, 17 minutes. And yes, I watched this match fairly recently. And it's one I had seen before, but I really loved it. It's a great match. I think it easily deems consideration for our 1989 choice. And do you see any others? I think those are the two main ones.
No, I'm not picking the Thunderdome match, even though I like Terry Funk. And sorry, Freebirds, I'm not picking y'all versus the Dynamic Dudes. Not going to happen. So, no, I'm good with those two.
All right, so I think our choice is going to be made easy here because, as you know, we cannot use wrestlers more than one time. And 1990, a show that we'll be talking more about later this week, features one of my favorite all-time tag team matches. And on this most recent rewatch, to me, it still completely holds up as just a wild brawl between two teams that's beating the piss out of each other in a very unconventional title match for the U.S. Tag Team Championships, and that is the Steiner Brothers and the Nasty Boys. And arguably, not even arguably, hands down, the best Nasty Boys match you'll ever see, I would think. And the Steiners were just freaks of nature at this point. Scott almost destroys Knobs with the Frankensteiner at the end of the match, and stiff chair shots throughout, a lot of receipts getting traded back and forth on a card that has a few good matches. Like the opener with the Midnight Express was really good. Hanson Luger was fun. Doom, Flair, and Arn is pretty good. But I think Steiner's Nasties, to me, is the standout match here.
I like it, but I want to hold off because this might be our only chance to include the Midnight Express in the Hollywood Havoc card. And so I think we still should consider at least Tommy Rich and Ricky Morton versus the Midnight Express.
Okay, I'll give you that. And I loved that match, too, just watching it. Those are my two matches of the night, so...
Yeah, so, 1991, the Chamber of Horrors.
Can we just pick, don't forget, too, we don't just have to pick the best matches. I mean, you can look at the Halloween Phantom defeating Tom Zenk, and we can squeeze it in the card knowing that it gets an awesome moment on the card here when Rude
that it gets Rick
after.
Rude in there, sure.
And that was just, definitely the most memorable moment of the night.
Well, I think the most memorable moment was by far the Chamber of Horrors. The only problem with the Chamber of Horrors is if we pick that, you got to take Vader out. Mm-hmm. You got to take Cactus Jack out. You got to take the Steiners out of the equation and Sting.
Yep.
So I don't think we're going to do that. Nope. And we have the TV championship, Austin versus Dustin Rhodes. But I don't know if that's like a really great match. I haven't seen that one in a long time. So I don't remember like being blown away. So
it was okay. And I mean, they fight again in a couple of years, so we could talk about it. But it's not one I don't think I would choose. I think the moment of Rude means more than that. What that match was, and it goes to the draw anyway, which isn't always a bad thing. But the whole build of the Phantom, and then him hitting the Rude Awakening and unmasking with Paul Lee, and just what it led to as well with the Dangerous Alliance. To me, I think it's an easy choice here on this card.
I don't have a problem with that because I think 92 was a. Was Rick Rude stinking it up in 92?
Yeah, and Chono.
Yeah, so that's not the great Rude-Chono match. And I think that'll be then for Rude. And then nothing else on that card really stands out. I mean, Luger versus Simmons is not going to be our world title match. So,
right, definitely not.
You sure you don't want to put Bill Kazmir versus Oz, man? I mean,
as much as I love Oz, I think I might have to make that sacrifice this time around.
Yeah, I think I'm going to I'll go with you because it kickstarts the Dangerous Alliance angle, which me, you, and Chris Zellner are going to explore in depth on a future episode of Exile. No, this year, either Christmas vacation or Thanksgiving vacation.
I got to get through the rest of that set then. I've been way behind.
Don't get behind, man. We'll you can burn through it, man, hour a night. Okay. Anyway, so let's move on to 92.
All right, so 92... We got Steamboat Pillman as a singles match. Vader, Nikita Koloff for the U.S. title.
Not very good.
Yeah. Wyndham Rhodes versus Williams and Austin.
That's really good, man. That's really good. That has to be a contender for that tag title.
Yeah, I think that's about it. Sting Jake is nothing. Simmons Barbarian, no thanks. I think it comes down to Pillman, Steamboat, and then the tag.
Well, here's the thing about the Sting match is it actually inspires our third game tonight, the spin the wheel.
Yes, so I've heard. But regardless, it sucks. So I think we should.
Yeah, and I think I like the Pillman Luger match more than Pillman Steamboat. So
right, that's right.
I think the only contender right here is Wyndham and Dustin versus Doc and Austin. Right. Okay.
Yeah, so that officially eliminates Austin Dustin from 91 as well, which is fine.
Yeah. So, okay, let's move on. 1993. What do you? Oh, I know what's going on here.
Okay, 93. We got Vader, Jack, and the Texas Death. Obviously, we're not gonna do Rude Flair because everybody's rude.
I'm telling you, man, a really good, awesome William Regal performance, and a good performance from Davey Boy Smith for that TV title.
I like that
really
match.
Really great match, man.
Is Regal okay? I was thinking Regal Steamboat, but that was Fall Brawl, so we're okay there. Regal, my only concern would be, do we need Regal later? But I don't think so. I don't remember him having too many big Halloween matches.
Well, we can put that one, because the two matches here that are in contention, like I said, Dustin Austin is fine, but I don't think that's like a great matchup. Like, you know, like an all-time classic.
Right, and we just use them anyway.
Yeah. I think the only two we should consider are that Regal Davey Boy and Vader versus Cactus.
I agree. Cause, I mean, we may not get Vader on here otherwise. Well, yeah, I don't think so. And we probably won't get Jack on here, obviously, either. He's gone by the next year. So, okay, let's do those two in contention.
All right. 94, which we did for the Place to Be special with Scott and my buddy Charles.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, Vader, Guardian Angels here. I don't think it was one of their better ones. You know, I think it was fine. I think they, as usual, beat the crap out of each other, but... obviously, they've had much better battles. Hogan Flair, I think, has to be up there as consideration. It would take out our world title and Hogan. If
I don't know if that won't beat the world title match I have.
Okay, so we'll put that aside. How about, well, I guess it depends where you go at 90. You have Nasties versus Funk and Buck, which is a fun little match. And there's really not a lot here. I mean, Bad and Honky sucked. Pretty Wonderful, Stars and Stripes. I don't know.
Horrible. This is rough, man. Mm. I know Austin bumped around like a maniac for Duggan in this one.
Well, you've already used Austin.
But hold on. No, we're just putting matches for nominations here. We haven't crossed anybody off yet.
Okay. Well, let's put that there. And I say we put Vader Angel on there. And then
Vader versus Angel might be a good way to get Vader on the card.
And it's still a
because match. They had really good matches, those two, Vader and Big Boss Man. So
okay.
I like the idea of let's include Hogan and Flair just as a consideration, and let's include Vader versus the Guardian Angel just as a consideration, and the Nasty Boys versus Funk and Buck. I don't remember that being a good match. I think the feud had already peaked at Fall Brawl, so we don't need to put that on either.
Okay. All right. Let's look at 1995. Here, what do we got here? So we got Bad and Page. They had some pretty good matches. This one goes 17 minutes for them. Sting and Flair, Pillman, Arn's fun too, but we'll see about Pillman. I think that at least goes on the list.
Yeah, this is a rough card here, man. Johnny Bad versus Diamond Dallas Page. Why couldn't it be that Fall Brawl match?
I know.
Right? That would have been so much easier. I haven't seen that Bad versus Page, but television title, I don't think I want that to be my television title anyway.
No.
Sting Flair versus Pillman Anderson seems like the only real contender here.
We better have a second one because I think that we're going to get hosed. So we might want to have something else.
Well, no, because I mean, here's my mentality is that if we use Pillman here, we don't have to use the Luger as the U.S. champ. We can pick another U.S. title match. But that really. I mean, you don't want to do Savage Luger. That was garbage. You don't want to use Giant or Hogan. This is hard.
Sabu. I mean, if we really just want to get a match on there and not hurt guys, lose guys, we can do Sabu JL. You know what I mean? Like, it's fine.
Yeah, that's
No,
for a 3-minute throwaway match, I don't want that on my all-time. Let's just keep Sting and Flair versus Pillman and Arn. Because remember, we don't have to use every year. So
I'm going to make us.
That might be a year where we just don't have anything.
I'm going to make it happen. All right, so let's go to 1996. We open with Dean and Ray for the Cruiserweight title. That goes on the list, but obviously I think we're not going to get that far with that
one. Yeah, I think I'm with you on that one.
Six, Chris Jericho was fine. You get Mongo and Benoit versus the Faces of Fear. I don't remember much about that, but I'm sure it was hard-hitting. Dan, have you watched 96 recently? I forget. I know Scott has.
Not Halloween Havoc. It's earlier 96, but... Okay.
I'm curious if that's like a pretty hard-hitting match. You would think with Benoit and the Faces of Fear it would be, but Outsiders Harlem Heat was really not much besides Outsiders being their big tag title win, and then Hogan Savage for the title.
Man, that's a rough card. Man, Halloween Havoc, not the great card. How was DDP versus Eddie?
I don't remember. This is a card I haven't seen in a while. I'm getting close to it in my live watching of 96 here, but let's put DDP Eddie on the list.
And let's put Six Jericho on the list too, because
those are the two choices.
I don't know if we're actually going to be able to use either of those guys.
Well, 97's a layup. I mean, it's not even a question, right?
Yeah, 97, it's Ray versus Eddie.
Okay.
Right?
Yep, mark it down. 98.
Well, hold on. Well, what else happened on 97, though?
Well, Savage DDP is really good, too. That's the Texas Death Match they had.
Oh, yeah, that was good. That was good. Yuji Nagata versus Ultimo Dragon was fun.
Yes. This is a great card. I just think Ray Eddie is best. It's the best option of all of them.
Yeah, no, that's like a must-have match. Like we wouldn't even be taken seriously if we left that match out.
Right. Savage and DDP, if that was like 95 or 96, would be an easy layup of a choice.
Okay, I'm with you on that one.
So 98, is this the title match you were talking about?
To me, a slam dunk.
Yeah.
Slam dunk. This, by far, will definitely be the world title match. Bill Goldberg versus Diamond Dallas Page.
Yep.
Unless we want to get sick and put Hogan versus Warrior on, you know.
I'm okay with that.
Because really, this card, I watched this live, all 3.5 hours. Started hot with Jericho and Raven. And then you literally just sat through a card for 3 hours until you got to Goldberg and Page. And of course, the Hogan Warrior spectacle. The rest was just very uncompelling. So I think, and plus, that's a great title match. So yep. I think that has to be our world title match.
Yep, I'm down with that. So let's move on to 99.
I know, oh man, this kills me. Because, you know, I would pick Bill Goldberg versus Sid Vicious. I love their feud. Mm-hmm. I am a huge fan of their feud. And so that's what I would pick.
Yeah, but we gotta have Goldberg DDP, I think.
Yeah, I know.
Because we haven't seen any other really good
DDP
world title
DDP versus
matches.
Flair, man. God.
We haven't seen any other good world title matches either. You know? Like, what else would we pick for a world title match if we didn't pick that one?
Hogan Flair and the
or Hogan Savage, I guess.
This is a rough card because this is not a good card either, and you can't pick Eddie versus Saturn because Eddie's locked in on that cruiserweight match.
I don't know if that probably not the opener. Harlem Heat, Filthy Animals, First Family. I don't know.
We got to pick if we're going to pick a match. We already have
Luger
better
Brett.
TV title, Luger Brett. Yeah. I think so.
Okay.
Nothing match. You can have nothing matches on your cards, but
right.
That's really hard, man.
All right, last one, 2000. We got Reno and Sergeant AWOL. Hell of a feud. Man, they got bad fast. 2000.
I don't know if Russo had survived up to this point. I mean, it feels like he's still there, but
I think he was. I'm pretty sure he was until late in 2000. I mean, opener.
Booker T versus Scott Steiner was pretty good.
Yeah, that's a title though.
What's the opener? Jindrak and O'Hare versus.
Never mind, it's got Ray in it.
Yeah, this is bad, man. This is rough.
You can go with the First Blood DNA match. With Bagwell and David Flair.
I don't even remember Jeff Jarrett versus Sting. Was that with like a bunch of fake Stings and Jarrett like
yes.
having a... Oh, God, that sucked.
Yeah.
This is an ugly car. I'm going to say that nothing from 2000 makes it.
All right. Well, if we have to, let's put Awesome Vampiro on there. If we have to have a throwaway military card. Well, I would pick the general erection match, but I don't want to use the U.S. title on that farce. But Storm and Hugh Morris actually had an okay feud in 2000. Like, that wasn't awful.
Yeah, that's true, but ugh.
Okay. All right, so why don't we go back and try and piece this thing together now?
Okay.
So we got a framework mainly in place. What are the layups that we know we're solidified on? Ray Eddie.
Goldberg
Page.
DDP. So that takes out our cruiser title. And that takes out our
world
title match, yep. Right?
Yep.
And so next, well, let's try and knock out the titles first.
Okay.
So we have the crew. So what's the tag match? The tag title?
I think it's Wyndham and Rose against Dr. Death and Austin. I think that was the best title match.
That'd be better than Steiners versus Nasties?
That wasn't a title match. That was U.S. tag titles.
Oh, okay.
So we can have both if we want.
Wow, okay. Okay, yeah, I like it. All right, so we're going to do Wyndham Rhodes versus Doc and Austin. Mm-hmm. And then you want to do, on 1990, you want to do the U.S. Tag Champs, Steiners versus Nasties over Rich and Morton and Midnights?
Yeah, both matches are so good, but Steiners Nasties is so much fun. I feel like it's so underrated. If listening to the show, and we'll talk again more about it later this week, but if this show can get people to watch that match or they haven't seen it before, they need to do it because it's just an awesome match. Even if you've seen it like a long time ago, like I had, and then rewatching it earlier this year and then again recently, I'm like, oh my God, this is so fun. And it was the point I was like checking with Chad Campbell to say, am I overrating this for our show? And I'm like, what do you have it at? Because I feel like I'm like coming in crazy high on it. But it's so fun.
Okay. Now this is the hard part right here. Okay.
Yeah.
Do we pick Luger and Pillman as our U.S. title?
Or General Erection? What's your
probably
other choice?
Has to be Luger, Pillman.
Yeah,
right?
The only thing that screws up is Luger Brett from 99, but we can throw something else in there without a problem. So,
okay.
Yep, I said we do Luger, Pillman. I think that's the best available U.S. title match for the U.S.
And then our TV title, we have to go Regal Davey, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, Regal Davey, which means that Vader Cactus is eliminated, right?
Yep, then that can get us to Vader Angel in 94.
Okay, and so how many matches does that leave us with?
We got to pick 93.
We can't do 95 either because Sting and Flair, Pillman's right. Taken out with that Luger match.
So we need 95, 96, and 99 is what's left. Because we got Regal, all right, so far we got Luger, Pillman in 89, Steiner's Nasties in 90. Phantom Zenk in 91, Wyndham and Rhodes versus Dr. Death and Austin in 92, Regal Bulldog in 93, Ray Eddie in 97, or Vader Angel 94, Ray Eddie 97, Goldberg Page 98, and then 2000 if we want to throw it in there, awesome Vampiro. So we got time. I said we try and do 12 matches, and even if
okay,
they're
well,
you know, we throw more.
Well, here's what I say. I think we can do 6 versus Chris Jericho in 96.
Okay.
You know, it's they're not going to steal the show. They'll probably flood a few moves, mm-hmm. but if you put it on before Ray and Eddie, it's only going to make Ray and Eddie look even more special.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, but we'll do the card order. I think we should do that too. So we'll get there in a sec. And I agree with you. So let's use that. So 95 is the only one left.
99. And then we'll let's relook at 2002 because okay. that's. Because remember, we're booking the card, not Vince Russo, so right. we might be able to get a salvageable match. So 95, we already have Lex Luger, so that crosses out him versus Ming. We can't. You know what we should do? We should show the Hogan versus Giant monster truck competition.
Yeah, all right, we can do that. I'm fine with that.
You know what I mean?
I mean, yeah, it's either that or Sabu JL or Kurosawa Hawk. I mean, so we don't really have many other choices. Okay, so we got to figure out 99, 2000. 99, I think we're in a tough spot.
Well, hold on. Let's go match by match here mm-hmm. for 99. We've already used our cruiserweight match with Eddie versus Ray. So that's out. Disco versus Lash LaRue's out. Not that we would pick it. We've already done our tag title match with Steiners and Nasties?
That's the U.S. tag titles. But we did use the Austin and Williams Rhodes and
yeah, so that's out. And then we've already used Eddie Guerrero; his match is out. We haven't used Brad Armstrong or Berlin yet. Ugh. We've already used the TV title; that's out. We've used Lex Luger; he's out.
Yep.
We've used the world title; that's out. We've used Bill Goldberg; he's out. DDP's out. Flair's yep. out. Yeah, there you go. Bill Goldberg and Sting, they're about out because that's for the world title. It has to be Brad Armstrong versus Berlin.
All
yay.
Right. That's okay. We can't hit all home runs. We'll go with that. Maybe we can make the turn into Alex Wright halfway through the match or something.
hold on. Does this feel wrong to you not having Ric Flair?
He wasn't really synonymous with Halloween Havoc, though. Like, if this was Starcade.
This is WCW,
yeah,
brother.
I know, but if it was like Starcade or the Bash, like, to me, those are flair. We got to have flair at those events. I don't know. I'm okay.
I'm almost tempted to get rid of Luger versus Pillman for the U.S. title. That's really good, man. But just to, so we could get Flair in later on. Like, what was the one where Flair and Pillman teamed up?
95. We lose the monster truck. But we lose Sting. Do we have Sting elsewhere? Or no?
No. No, we don't.
Okay, we got to get Sting and Flair on then. That's fine. Let's do that. Do that tag from 95. That's fine. Well, that gets a Sting, Arn, and Flair. So, I mean, those are three WCW stalwarts.
Didn't that just feel awkward not having those guys on the card?
Well, like, one I could have lived with, because in doing this with Scott all the time, we always like, oh, man, I'm Bret Hart, and I got it. But, I mean, there's always someone that gets left off. But to have all three of those guys not on doesn't really
right. matter. Right. Like Sting, Flair, and Arn Anderson, like the three true representatives, right? And that was kind of like the lone highlight of 95 anyway, right? Was that tag?
Yeah, and so and now we're, yep.
So then if we're going to do that, okay, if we're going to put Sting and Flair, then in 99, that opens up Luger versus
Brett,
right? Doesn't that sound much better?
Yep.
For 99?
Yeah, but now we also don't have a U.S. title match, so we got to find one.
Do we have to have the U.S. title on there?
Every title could be defended. That's a big one. That's the second. I mean, you want to talk about things that are WCW, you got to have the U.S. title. But I think we look at 2000 and we just do the General Erection Storm. Because, I mean, that feud was one of the highlights of 2000.
That's a great point, and it's got to be better than Mike Awesome versus Vampiro. Yeah.
That, I mean, that whole feud, I don't remember that one. That's when Duggan had turned Canada. But they had, like, the New Blood Rising. They had a long feud, the two of them. And Storm, that was his best year, arguably, was 2000 with all the stuff. He was like carrying WCW's mid-card with all the gimmicks he had, all the belts. So, I mean, I think that's a good representation of the year 2000, that feud.
And then what are we doing for 1989?
I don't think we have too many options left. We can do...
Have many options.
The opener. Oh, no, we can't even do the opener because it's Steve Williams. I think it's going to be Road Warriors Skyscrapers.
You know... Oh, yeah. Road Warriors Skyscraper. You know what? Road Warriors, yeah. Let's do Road Warriors Skyscraper. Sid Vicious was really over, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
Okay.
And I guess so, the Road Warriors on there, too.
Yeah. I would have liked to have seen that Steiner's Doom go on just because of the story they were telling, but you don't want to give up that tag match, right?
Well, so I guess it comes down to we can flip them, right? So we could do Doom Steiner's and then the Midnight Express match.
That's a hard decision. I'm going to let you call it. What would you rather? You're calling that one.
All right. So we either have Doom Steiners and then Rich and Morton versus the Express, or Steiners Nasties and then Road Warriors. I got to go with the Road Warriors. Oh, I don't know.
Let's go Road Warriors. Plus, Sid was hugely over in the Skyscrapers.
Right. So we probably take a little hit.
Really, really over.
Star rating. But, I mean, getting the roadies on there is cool. So, all right.
Right.
So what do we got for time here, Dan?
5 minutes, guys. 5 minutes.
All right. So let's organize the card, and then we will, like I said, we will go ahead and pick an arena and announce team. So we're going to open things up first. Or I mean, I think we can both agree that we're going to have Goldberg Page last, right?
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. So that's our main event. So we get that last.
And I consider star power when I'm making my list. So I've kind of been moving around the matches as we've been talking here, JR. Mm-hmm. And I think I have an order that I'm happy with, combining match times as well as star power and making sure matches don't kind of overshadow other matches.
Okay, I'm down with that too. So based on your star power theme, I'm curious if you have what I have. The semi-main event next to last is Sting, Flair, Pillman, and Arn.
Absolutely.
Okay, so I think we're good there. We get those last two.
Yep.
All right.
Let's see. Well, let's go keep moving from the top. After that, I have another tag match. I got Roadies and Skyscrapers because of the Roadies being huge.
So I had that flipped. I actually had that opening to get the crowd fired up with the Road Warriors because I feel like there's a lot of star power throughout this card. And I actually have the tag title match before Sting and Flair. So it's Wyndham, Rhodes, Williams, and Austin. Because I feel like they're going to go 30 minutes. Crowd.
Well, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, I got something for that. I actually had your Steiner's Nasty Boys Brawl open the show.
Okay, that works too.
Because that's a really exciting match. I mean, you don't want to start the show off on a DQ.
Okay.
But having said that, if I think I have to move it because Sting, Flair, and Brian Pillman and Arn Anderson also ends in a DQ.
Right.
So, okay, I flipped that with my other star power match, which was Lex Luger and Bret Hart.
Yep, I'm down with that there. So our bottom three will be Luger, Bret, into Sting, Flair, Pillman, and Arn into the world title match.
Yes.
So what do you think about the...
How about this opener? Steiners versus Nasties.
Yep.
Like we said, hot brawl. Then we want another match to keep the crowd going, but nothing that's going to overshadow something later on.
Yep.
So I got Six versus Jericho as second, following Steiner's Nasties.
And then what about Regal, Davey Boy?
Exactly. You got a 15-minute draw. You're bringing the crowd down from, like, the spotty juniors. Okay? But Regal Davey is still interested enough to keep them captivated.
Mm-hmm.
And then right after that, we jump into, I'm going to say, we jump into Rection and Storm and Duggan in the U.S. title match.
Okay.
Because that really is an undercard feud. You know, the U.S. title is usually a bigger place on the card. But at this time, you're in a match that's entertaining enough. Like you said, that wasn't entertaining. Duggan always gets the crowd hot behind him. But there's no way he's going to overshadow the next match, which is Rey Mysterio versus Eddie Guerrero for the Cruiserweight title.
All right, so
Two minutes to go, guys.
Okay, so my only issue there is having the three title matches in a row. Can we put the Road Warriors in between those two?
I guess we could. I just think the Road Warriors are such big stars. I think they need to be up near the top of the card on the, you know, that classic fold the paper in half and which side of the paper do you fall under? You know, I don't mind the three title match. I mean, dude, we're defending every title. It's like Night of the Champions here.
All right. We'll put it there. I think we should do the Phantom after the Cruiser match.
Exactly. Cause now you want an angle.
Yeah.
Because the crowd, now, this is the way I have it. The crowd's really going to have to settle in because they're about to get a 30-minute clinic with that tag title match.
Yep.
Okay. And then, following the tag title match, I got Vader versus Angel.
Yep, let them beat the piss out of each other.
And it's a short match. Then you got Roadies versus Skyscrapers, only goes about 11 minutes, not too long. Then Luger versus Bret, which only goes about 7.5-8 minutes. Another, you know, match that doesn't go too long.
Mm-hmm.
Then you got the longer tag with Sting, Flair versus Pillman Anderson. And then you got your main event world title, Bill Goldberg versus DDP. And, you know, we could probably still throw in Hogan and Giant in the monster truck competition on the show.
All right. So we got Steiner's Nasty's opening, Six Jericho, Regal Bulldog, General Erection versus Storm and Duggan, Ray Eddie, Phantom versus Tom Zenk, Windham and Rhodes over against Williams and Austin. Vader, Angel, Road Warrior, Skyscrapers, Luger, Bret, Sting, Flair, Pillman, Arn, Goldberg, DDP. I think the show should be in Vegas. That was kind of the synonymous Halloween Havoc location.
And I don't know about your announce team. I'm going to go Jesse Ventura and Tony Schiavone dressing up in their Halloween costumes. So I just think there's something endearing about that.
It's my favorite team, WCW, so fine with me. No questions asked.
Yeah.
And time is up.
All right. So there it is.
That was crazy. I didn't expect us to, like, just stop on a dime right there.
It was perfect. We got all 12 matches in, as I envisioned. See? You never trust me, Will, with these building the card things. I knew we could do it. All right. Let's take a break. Let's listen to some of these shows on the Pro Wrestling Only PWO-PTBN podcast feed. And when we come back, we'll do our third and final challenge. We'll do some quick mail, and then we'll
probably gave his own show to Tad Goldstool. Any given second, he could go mad postal. Stay waving that power band space cannon. And had the nerve to jump in the face. Erase Bannon. Pumped out. Luckily, he deaded it. Guess who's the schmuck who's credited with editing it? Your man, Moltar, the cop.
Do you watch pro wrestling? Do you love pro wrestling? We do too. And there's only one podcast feed that you can't miss.
PWO PTBN Podcast Network. That's the Pro Wrestling Only Place to Be Nation Podcast Network.
We have a host of brilliant shows dedicated to wrestling past and present.
Whether it's the territories, Japan, Lucha, old school or new school, we've got something for you.
Get a dose of history on Exile on Bad Street with Chris Zellner.
Listen to reviews of current pay-per-views on the PTBN reaction shows. Not just WWE, but New Japan, Ring of Honor, and NXT. And get your weekly update on everything else that's going on in the indies, lucha, and beyond on This Week in Wrestling.
Relive WCW Supercards on Where the Big Boys Play with Parv and Chad.
Join Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave on one of the very best shows for super hardcore nerds, wrestling culture.
Go deep into WWF history and discover the Bob Backlund and Bruno Sammartino eras on Titans of Wrestling.
Don't miss the Pro Wrestling Super Show with Stephen Graham and Tim Livingston.
You can get the full archive of Goodwill Wrestling with Good Old Will from Texas.
There's Tag Teams back again with Kelly and Marty Sleaze.
Then there's the only pro wrestling game show, Brainbuster, with me, Johnny Sorrow, and a panel of great guests every time.
Get them all on one feed.
PWOPTBN Podcast Network.
You know you want to hear it.
Back to back. Belly to belly, yes, my friend. Back to back. Belly to belly.
It was a zombie jamboree. Took place in the New York cemetery. It was a zombie jamboree. Took place in the New York cemetery.
All right, Boys Tradition, we are back. Episode 11 of the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling Podcast. And we are up to challenge number 3. We've already finished the Game of Thrones. We have built our ultimate Halloween Havoc card. And I hear, I hear a little rumbling somewhere, a little chanting. It sounds like Halloween's in the air, Dan McGinn. Tell us what challenge number 3 is.
I was working in the lab late one night when my eyes beheld an eerie sight. For my monster from his slab began to rise, and suddenly, to my surprise...
It sounds like something scary is in the air, JR, is what it is. We are going to play a little game of Spin the Wheel, Make the Deal.
Spin the wheel, make the deal.
So this is just the Dangerous Alliance's version of Spin the Bottle, right?
I hope you guys land on me every okay. time.
Yeah, you and Will should after you sandbagged me in the Game of Thrones. But anyway, all right, so Spin the Wheel, Make the Deal. Just like the old WCW game of fun and random choice, we have a wheel built with all kinds of different wrestling games and questions and answers and whatever else is on this wheel. We're going to take turns spinning it until we fill the full 30 minutes. We're going to answer whatever questions come up on the wheel, and we'll have a little fun with it. So, Will, as the elder...
And we're going in completely blind here, right?
Oh, yeah, we know nothing of what's going on this wheel. We are spinning it and hoping we get something good, so we have no clue what's even part of it. So, Will, as the elder statesman, I'll defer to you. Why don't you give it the first tug?
All right, here we go.
All right, guys, I want you to tell us what your favorite wrestling toy was growing up.
Oh, that's a good one. Favorite wrestling toy. So, I mean, I had like every Hasbro figure, and I used them just relentlessly. So they're on the list. If I have to just pick one toy, though, it's going to be my wrestling Hulk Hogan wrestling buddy that has been through the wars.
Oh,
and the buddy is still sitting now in my son's room, and Dan can vouch for this. And for the beating that thing took, it is in like almost pristine condition still. Got me through many a Saturday morning wrestling matches. My sister refereeing as I went to town with him, came with me to college, has been back here. So, I mean, it's been around, you know, this Hulk Hogan wrestling buddy has been in my life since 1990. So it's probably my favorite toy, but my Hasbro figures were probably the most used toys.
That's hilarious.
How about you?
I'm a little older than you, well, a lot older. And so when I was a kid, the wrestling toys were those big plastic paperweights that WWF called wrestling figures where the paint would peel off. What company was that? LBJ?
Yes. LBJ doesn't sound right.
LJB?
Yeah, that sounds better.
Something JLB or something. I don't know. Whatever.
With the asbestos.
You know which ones. The ones where, like, Hulk Hogan's flexing a muscle and the other one, you know, and then Andre Giant just looked there like, you know, and the only thing you could do with him was give a person either a clothesline or a body slam.
LJN.
And Jesse Ventura was basically useless because he was just flexing and you couldn't do anything with him. It was really the only wrestling toys available like when I was a kid. But man, by that time I was starting to grow out of toys, you know. I think my favorite toys then would be like the ones that the AWA figures that look like He-Man figures. I mean, literally they took like these faces and put them on He-Man action figures. And that was it, right? I mean, that's all they did. They just put wrestling faces on He-Man action figures. But I don't know. I've always been kind of fascinated by action figures. I really like the classic series that they had, like where they started re-releasing the old wrestlers as in the new style. Like they'd have the Fabulous Freebirds. Picked that up. I picked up like Junkyard Dog with the chain and Fabulous Freebirds. And
I got the Hollywood Blondes on my wall. Scott Criscola bought that for me.
You know, but you know, I'm a firm believer. You don't keep toys in packages. You open them up and you play with them and contort and twist them around. And
those rubber guys had to have like lead paint that came off of those, right? I mean,
Well, you know, sad thing was, man, I didn't have a lot of money growing up, and so like I had to choose my toys, man. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to pay for a big block of rubber, like you said. So, man, I was all about G.I. Joes and my Star Wars action figures, where you got guns and weapons and cars and vehicles to play with. So I didn't invest in them, man. You know, I was really disappointed. And then that you couldn't even move the guys on top of that. Such a shame. You know, so you could get better matches using your G.I. Joe figures with all of their movable joints. You know, you could do really cool DDTs and, you know, doomsday devices with your G.I. Joe figures better than those.
Do you remember who made the AWA figures?
No, I'm guessing He-Man, whoever made He-Man.
Remco.
They were the same guy. The Remco. There you go. They were the exact same people. They were He-Man figures.
All right, here's what Remco made. Here's just a quick sampling of what Remco made. The 1953 Medicine Chest, a Coney Island penny machine. Frogman, the U.S. Navy Commando, the Whirlybird Helicopter, Johnny Reb Cannon, Project Yankee Doodle. They made Beatles figures in 1964.
Ice.
Here you go. Senator Barry Goldwater doll in 1964. Oh,
I wonder if he blew up through an LBJ atomic bomb commercial.
Well, they also had it. Speaking of LBJ, they made a Lyndon Johnson one as well. Kennedy Airport Air Traffic Control Center.
Oh, as long as it wasn't in Dallas.
1967, a Star Trek Astro Cruiser. Boeing 727 toy airplane in 1968.
Wait a minute. They didn't have the Kennedy parade route vehicle?
I don't see that one, no. No, they had the thing, the air traffic control center. That's it. They had the Munsters figures in 1964.
Oh, I didn't even know they had Munsters figures. I got to look that up.
I bet Johnny Sorrow owns them. Seems like something Johnny Sorrow would own, Munsters action figures. Baby Sister Grow-A-Tooth in 1969. Monkeys figures in 1970. Partridge Family doll in 1973. I Dream of Jeannie bottle in 1976. Ronald McDonald playset and figures. Dukes of Hazzard figures in 1981. This is probably one you don't want these days. Bill Cosby's Kids, 1978. I wonder how many there are out there.
Oh, that's awesome.
A lot more than they knew at the time, probably. Conan action figure, 1984, Conan the Barbarian. My Sweet 16 plays cosmetics. And they closed up shop, it looks like, in 1994. It's SWAT Cats, 1994. They fired for bankruptcy originally in 1971, came back, had a little run. So they did not do the He-Man toys. They got Remco. Dan, you want to tell us about your Bret Hart vibrator, or is that a different line of toys?
Well, actually, I was going to say that I ran Barry Goldwater versus LBJ when I would have my wrestling figures all out and I'd do my own pay-per-view. So that actually was a well-fought battle.
No, it wasn't. It was a squash. LBJ killed Barry Goldwater. It was a squash.
But to get
extended squash.
Ladybird was a great valet, though.
But it's funny because I did collect the wrestling figures like JR, and then I also dove into the WCW equivalents during like the 1990s.
Made those.
Yeah, and it was really funny because over time, of course, they'd get lost or sold or got rid of. I don't know. I lost a lot of them over the years. And the only one that I have left out of both collections is Sid Vicious in his black onesie. That's it.
That
I don't know
ridiculous.
Why. So I just have it up on like on my bureau. I don't know why, but it's there and kind of a reminder of simpler times, I think.
So I had a bunch of those too, and they were always the jobbers in my Hasbro promotion. I had Tom Zenk and Pillman, Luger, Flair. Flair had the blue tights and doing the strut, which made it like really hard to use them.
The big rubber dolls was LJN.
Yes.
LJN.
Yep, yeah. LJN.
A dog that I had before Basil actually chewed up Brian Pillman's fingers, so I made that an angle, you know? He said, oh, his hand is mangled in an accident, you know, that sort of thing. Anyway.
All right, I'm going to spin the wheel. Let's do challenge number two here, so I'm going to give it a yank.
Guys, I call this one Table for Three. If you were going to have dinner with anybody in wrestling, who would be the people that you would want to invite to dinner with you?
Live or dead? Current?
Of all time.
Of all time. All right, well, I went first last time. I'll let you kick this one off.
All right, this is easy. So I'm going to go with Jerry Lawler, okay, because he's Jerry Lawler. I'm very envious of my friend Rob Naylor for getting to work with Dusty Rhodes. So I would like Dusty Rhodes to be there. And I think the third person on that table would have to be probably someone. I'm going to go with William Regal. I think that'd be an interesting dynamic. Regal, Dusty, and Lawler. And up until this summer, something that very well could have happened.
All right, so I like that one. I mean, I have to go with Vince McMahon. I want to sit down with him.
Wouldn't you get just fed up with the bullshit, though?
I feel like, you know, Vince is that guy who's always on when he's on camera and stuff. But I feel like those times where maybe you get a couple drinks in him, like if you hear the old stories where he'd like go out with the boys and kind of unwind and relax a bit, like I'm hoping to get that Vince, you know, get a couple beers in him, maybe get a line in him. maybe.
Oh, there you go. Fair enough.
I got to have Randy Savage there. And not just because I want to see what happened with them, but because Randy Savage is my favorite all time. So I got to have him there.
I might as well throw Stephanie in too. That'd be real fun.
I'm all set with that. So I have Savage. I have Vince.
You can't go Hogan because Hogan,
I don't want
would
Hogan
by far just, you wouldn't know what was real and what was fake.
I'm trying to think of like who'd be a good, someone that would go well with them, but not like Austin. I think Austin would be fun too. So you have Austin and Vince. They talk a lot.
I would go Jake the Snake.
Jake, yeah, Jake's a good one too.
But I pre-crack addiction.
Pre-crack addiction, Jake. All right, Jake or Austin, either one. But Savage and Vince are my two real big ones that I got to have there.
Okay, I like it.
How about you, Dan?
My silly answer is the team of Rowdy's Rowdies from Survivor Series 89, because I think that'd be hilarious. Maybe kick out Snuka, since he's kind of, you know, a murderer and all, but I think Roddy Piper would be a good choice. I think Piper would have been cool just to talk to and pick his brain. I'm also kind of biased because I used to write and watch for Legends House, so I got to see like Piper and like guys like Jimmy Hart and Hillbilly Jim, and I'm like, you know, I think I'd like to just sit down and eat and pick brains with those people. I thought of the Fink too. I think the Fink is just full of knowledge and info that I'd like to just pick his brain about, you know, about the business and that sort of thing.
Yeah, Fink would be good too.
I have my most uncomfortable table of all time, and that would be Dick Murdoch along with Bad News Brown, Dick Murdoch, noted KKK member, along with Ultimate Warrior.
There you go.
I think that'd be very uncomfortable since those old guys really had no respect for Warrior ever. So,
queer and don't make the world go round, as the Warrior said.
That's horrible.
Awful person.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's, I don't know, I mean, there's a lot of awful people in wrestling, but the way that they've just kind of whitewashed Warrior, just so disgusting.
Still mind-blowing, though, how he died the day after he came back. I'll never get past the timing of that, like how fucked up There you go. I'm dropping
it
up.
I think it was too much for his roided heart to take.
I know. I really this is crazy.
And everybody was commenting on him coming out on Raw, how gassed up he looked and how out of breath he was. Like, people knew something was wrong.
Yeah, but still. I mean, it could have happened the day before, even a week later. Just like, he's on the Hall of Fame, he's at WrestleMania, he's on Raw, and then he's dead after not being on for like 15 years, whatever, 20 years, whatever it was. It was
okay,
just
right.
Mind-blowing. All right, Dan. Will, spin the wheel.
All right, let's do this.
All right. Actually, this makes a lot of sense. We did just talk about it with the cards, building the card, but your most memorable moment, if you will, for Halloween Havoc, guys.
Oh, that's easy for me. That's Goldberg versus DDP. We didn't really talk about the matches, JR.
Mm.
But for me, this was, I have already, man, WCW was coming off some horrible pay-per-views. Mm-hmm. We're talking Fall Brawl 98, which was an embarrassment to wrestling. What was the one before? Road Wild 98, which was horrible, which was capped off by the actually, that weekend of Road Wild, my brother-in-law passed away of a heart attack. And so I don't have good memories about that show. And I had already given up on WCW pay-per-views. I loved SummerSlam 98, but I was done with WWF by October. You know, I was just kind of done with everything in wrestling, really. I was just so fed up. And I watched Halloween Havoc. I enjoyed the show, even though, you know, only had a couple of really good matches. But Goldberg DDP was like one of those things. Okay, I'm back in. They hooked me in for a couple of more months. They lost me at Starrcade, and, you know, in WWF, I didn't come back around until late 99, early 2000 after Russo left. So, you know, it was, but that easily one of my most memorable moments as a wrestling fan watching that particular show.
I mean, I'm just going to go with the, you said moment, Dan, or Matt, what was the question?
Moment or memory from Halloween Havoc that stands out.
I think just the spin the wheel, make the deal concept to me is what I always think of first, right? Just the, you know, the costumes, the gravesite setting, and then spin the wheel, make the deal. Like the first Havoc I really remember being, I mean, I started watching WCW in like 91. I don't remember the 91 event that much, but 92 I remember very well, the build to Sting and Jake, and you know, reading it in the aftermag because I didn't get to actually see the match itself, and trying to understand what happened with the Cobra biting Jake and all that stuff. And I'm not saying it was a good show, but just the memory of the whole spin the wheel, make the deal concept that started there and then continued to 93 with Vader and Cactus, and that was a really fun feud for well, most of it outside of the Lost in Cleveland. But and I remember like the Flair Rude feud very well as very well too. So I would just say that concept of spin the wheel, make the deal is probably what I remember the most.
I remember the Chamber of Horrors was like my first real memory. It kind of it's kind of a goofy match if you think about it. But when I was about 10 years old watching it, it was like the biggest spectacle I'd ever seen. In wrestling, and I remember it was funny because, you know, you're 10 and you think weird things, and I just remember thinking like, Dad, is Abdullah gonna make it through the night? Like, I was like, you know, really concerned. And then later on in the show, you know, I remember going nuts when the Halloween, I think it was Shivani basically gave it away. He's like, you know, some people call that move the Rude Awakening. And I was like, I know who that is. I was like the last person to figure it out. Like, everybody else probably figured it out. Yeah, exactly. You know, when they see the mustache through the mask and whatnot. Of course, I didn't figure it out until I heard the phrase Rude Awakening. But yeah, I just remember 91 just being like one of those, wow, this is different. This is crazy. Like, when, you know,
Let me ask you a question here, Dan. The lever, when it kept falling down, that didn't give it away that something wasn't on the up and up?
Oh gosh, I probably didn't notice that either. I just told you that I didn't figure out Rude until right before it happened. So I probably, you know, it's funny. It's probably in watching like one of those you know, blooper shows on the network now that someone pulled still the lever, it fell, and I was like, what? You know, so yeah, I'm not really the most keen observer when I watch these things. I'll admit it.
All right, I'm going to go ahead and spin the wheel then. We'll see how keen you are with our next challenge. Spin away!
Spinning. Oh, I was hoping this one, it would land on this one. Guys, form your own PTB PWO faction.
Okay. So how many's in the faction? Five? You want to go five, I guess?
Sure.
Okay. So, Will, we got to be in there, me and you, with the leaders, the Dangerous Alliance, right? We'll build our own Dangerous Alliance. I think Parv has to be our annoying manager, right? He's the
our British manager or Welsh
kind of like
manager.
JJ Dillon, you know, kind of the,
oh my god,
the wordy kind of smart but, you know, sly evil manager.
You got to put Zellner in there for the work rate.
Yep. Okay, Zellner's our work rate guy. I think we'll, you know, we should have Scott as a grizzled veteran, right? He's our muscle, our angry old, you know, he's the Oli of our team. A lot of anger, piss and vinegar in there. And what about Dillon as our heat machine?
I like it.
Runs his mouth and gets everyone mad at us.
I like it.
All right, so there you go. Me, you, Scott, Dillon, Zellner, Parv, and Dan, you're the job boy we beat the shit out of when we debut.
Yeah, I have a feeling I'd be spray painted on the back a lot. Yes. Facing I wouldn't even be involved in the angle. I'd be fighting somebody else, and then you guys would come running down, beat both of us up, and then I'd be the one that gets the
there you go.
Real treatment.
I was at least going to give you the Louis Spicoli treatment there.
You know? Kind of our young boy.
Oh, gosh. Like,
you could be our young boy, Dan. You could be the hanger-on of the group.
All right. Yeah, can I be the Aldo Montoya of this clique?
You can be there when we beat up Carino. We'll let you join in.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
Okay. All right. Will, why don't you spin away?
All right, let's do this. Rolling now.
By the way, maybe Kevin Kelly should be our manager. We should probably use him if we have access.
That's true. Well, no, he's going to announce the matches.
Okay, he'll call our matches.
All right, guys, so the wheel landed on the wrestler who scared you.
Wrestler who scared me.
There's only one for me, and that legitimately it was Abdullah the Butcher in the early 80s. I was legitimately scared of Abdullah the Butcher when I was a kid. Now, by the time I, you know, got 10, 11, 12 years old, none of them scared me. But Abdullah the Butcher legitimately was scary as a little kid.
See, I didn't start watching until I was just about like 9 or so. So I'm probably in the same boat where none of them like legit scared me. I was scared of what Earthquake could do because the first angle I saw was him destroying Hulk Hogan. And they made it seem like he was the most vicious son of a bitch ever. So I'd say he scared me from a wrestling perspective, like who's he going to kill next. And maybe, I mean, as goofy as it was, some of the Papa Shango voodoo stuff was a little odd as an 11-year-old to think like, not really from a, oh, I'm afraid of this guy, but is voodoo real? Can guys like this really exist that can screw with you? I mean, I guess that's up there. And from a real world perspective, some of the slaughter, like Desert Storm stuff when you're 10 and you're hearing about this war break. It was like the first war I lived through and you're hearing about it on the radio and on TV. And then you got this guy saying he's hanging with Saddam Hussein. So I'd say that he's up there too in a different level. You know, like he wasn't scary himself, but what he represented frightened me as a child because who knew if we were going to get bombed? You know, you didn't know what was going to happen when you're 10 and the war's breaking up.
Oh, gosh. Absolutely. Papa Shango. Yes. Legit nightmares from Papa Shango.
Oh, my God.
Like, I mean, like the ooze from the head and the making Ultimate Warrior vomit. Like, I stopped watching wrestling for a couple months when I saw Ultimate Warrior vomit. Like, I mean, I'm talking like I probably needed therapy as a young kid watching that sort of thing.
Poor little Dan McGinn.
I made sure that, like, oh, is Papa Shango still around? No? Okay, I'll start watching it. I think it's safe. Like, that's how bad it was back in the day.
I'd argue you still need therapy now, honestly.
Shango, you're probably right in that.
All right, whose turn is it to spin here? Mine? Will's? I forget. Dan, why don't you take a spin? Okay, you spin.
I'll take a spin. There we go. It's kind of a similar story, just not Halloween Havoc specific. What's your first wrestling memory?
Okay, well, good. You go first.
I'm pretty old, man. It's going back.
Gorgeous George?
No, not that old. I remember my sisters. They're all older than me, okay? And I remember them watching wrestling when I was a little kid, 4 years old, 5 years old. And one of my sisters even had like an iron-on Tommy Rich t-shirt. Okay. But I remember clearly, and I always repeat this story, but I remember it, you know, happening. because I remember watching Mr. Wrestling too as a child. I remember watching Tony Atlas as a child. I remember like certain guys like always being Tommy Rich. Like I never understood, you know, where Tommy Rich went for all those years when he disappeared. But it has to be the Freebirds laying waste to Ted DiBiase, giving them the pile drivers. And I think I remember Ted DiBiase being in the hospital more than I remember the actual event. But they're now so interrelated. Like, I actually remember interacting with my parents, you know, saying, oh, you know, Ted DiBiase's in the hospital. Should we send a letter? And my parents, oh, shut up. It's fake, you know. So I think that's where I'm at. There's the dog.
That's next. Basil. All right. I have like a handful of distinct ones that come in some random order in my mind before I get to like spring of 90 when I really remember where we're at. So the first one I really remember is, I guess it had to be early 85. My sister was being born. My mom was in the hospital. My parents were both there. And my older half-brother and half-sister were watching me. They were babysitting because I was only five. And I remember distinctly wrestling with my brother and him being Hulk Hogan and me being the Iron Sheik and him doing like the fist pump and the air to the hand to the air. Like I didn't really know what it was, but I remember that very vividly for whatever reason that night. And I remember I got a bust. My nose got busted. It was bleeding. As my parents are out and we were wrestling. So I remember that very distinctly. I remember watching World Class, very distinctly on ESPN. And I remember like the triple cage, and I don't remember who it was or really anything about it, but I think my dad must have been watching and I was probably watching with him. So I have like a vague memory of World Class on ESPN. I have a vague memory of, I don't know if it must have been Primetime or Superstars, something again my dad was watching, and it was Akeem and Bret Hart. And I tried looking at Graham Cawthon's like site to see what this match was, and it might not even been them, but for some reason Akeem and Bret Hart are in my mind as like one of the first kind of matches I really saw. WWF. I remember my cousin Matt, who had been a big fan and then dropped out of it a bit before getting really back into it with me in 1990, bitching that wrestling had turned into chair fighting. And I think that was around like the Hogan and Zeus stuff when they kept using chairs to beat up Zeus. So he kept bitching that it was chair fighting and not wrestling anymore. So I remember that. And that all kind of comes together into 90, where I kind of got into WrestleMania 6. And I remember Global around this time. So that might have been a little bit later. I think. I don't think Global really started like 91 or 92. So I'd say those are like my first handful of memories. And then come WrestleMania 6, I was like, I remember everything from there.
I'm pretty envious of my buddy Brent Baker, good friend of mine, going to WrestleMania with him this year. He actually went to a show in Detroit, you know, when the Sheik was running Detroit, that was headlined by Dick Murdoch versus Killer Carl Cox in the 70s.
That is, I can see why you'd be jealous of that. What was your first live show?
Mine?
Yeah.
I think it was the WWF house show in 86. The one we talked about where it was headlined by Sheik and what did I say it was? It was Iron Sheik and Nikolai Volkoff versus the American Express, Spivey and Rotundo. It was Tito and Savage and Steamboat and Jake was the headline.
Mine was a long TV taping. I remember Warrior Perfect. I went with a church group. So how about you, Dan? What's your first memory?
First memory, I was coming back from a car show or something like with a friend of mine or somebody in the family. And we flipped on the TV afterwards. It was on a Sunday. And I don't know if it was All American or some other, you know, weekend show for WWF. And there was this story about this wrestler with blonde hair and a flat top who got fired. And he's now posing as a referee and he's making Greg Valentine's life a living hell. And there's talk about him maybe doing some ring announcing at the next pay-per-view. And I was like, I don't even know what this is, but I need to watch more of this. And it's not too often a rugged Ronnie Garvin angle is what gets you into wrestling. But that was actually the first like kind of thing that I saw on the screen. And then eventually that led to other stuff involving Hogan and Savage and that sort of thing. But I was hooked in on this story about why was he fired? I don't know why he's a referee now. Like, so there was all these questions. So, and then of course I couldn't get SummerSlam. My parents wouldn't let me. They just thought this was a passing thing. And then they eventually let me order Survivor Series months later because I wouldn't shut up about, you know, watching wrestling like every Saturday, all the syndicated shows. But had it not been for just kind of that random Valentine Garvin Hercules thing, I don't know what would have happened. I eventually probably would have picked it up, but it was that kind of got me initially.
So the chair fighting didn't turn you off like it did Matt, my cousin Matt?
No.
Chair fighting of summer of 89. All right, I'm spinning the wheel. Let's try and get another one in here.
All right. Oh, okay, guys. This is a title that you would bring back from the dead.
Hmm.
This is rough because there's a lot that need to stay buried.
Yeah.
You know, wouldn't bring the hardcore title back.
I mean, I liked the idea of bringing the Cruiserweight and making it a show on the network. Like, that could be cool if they do it right. I mean, there's a lot of talent out there that could put in it.
Yeah, but I think I'm glad the Cruiserweight title's gone because of the stigma of being a little guy.
Yeah.
Because that's where Daniel Bryan would have been stuck. True. That's where, you know, all of these little guys that have hope.
What about the TV title as a network title?
I love the TV title. I would bring it back, and I'd put it back on William Regal ASAP.
And would you make it just on the network only, network shows?
Yeah, network or SmackDown, you know?
Right.
I wouldn't put it on Raw. In fact, I think they need to split the SmackDown and Raw crews again. I think it would infuse life in both shows, to be honest.
I mean, they have a chance to do it when SmackDown moves to USA. That's when they should probably do it.
Yeah, I think they've really neglected it. I used to record SmackDown and not watch Raw, and now I don't watch either. So I think they really shit the bed on that one.
When does that happen? Is it soon? I thought it was soon they want to go to the USA. I mean, that's everything you hear is that that's when they're going to start making it something again. But
I don't know. I'm sure Zellner or Dylan could tell you. I'm sure they're counting down the days, but I have no idea.
Okay. What do we have for time, Dan?
Minute and a half.
All right, spin it quick.
All right. Okay, guys, what's your dream announcing team?
Hmm.
Mine's easy because it's already happened. That's Lance Russell and Dave Brown from Memphis. You know, I love those guys. I love their chemistry. I love them calling Memphis action. I have no shame in saying it. Memphis wrestling is my favorite style of wrestling, and it's my favorite promotion, and I wish it still existed. Let's bring back the Memphis title. That's the title I want to bring back, the CWA Southern title.
I mean, mine's got to have Jesse because Jesse's my all-time favorite. And I think my two favorite teams, my two dream teams have existed, like Jesse and Gorilla and Jesse and Schiavone and WCW. Like those are my two favorite teams of all time. And I like Vince and Jesse too, but those other two are, you know, when I recently rewatched the whole 93 pay-per-view and clashes for WCW, I was like, man, I forgot how good Jesse and Tony were together. It blows JR and Jesse away because Tony just feeds into it so much more. And he was really, really good still in 93. So I'd say those two are my dream teams, and we have plenty of footage of both of them, which is great.
Surprised that neither one of us picked JR.
I like JR a lot. Him and Heyman are probably on my list too, like in 01. I like them a lot. And even watching Havoc 90, like I thought they were good on that show. Just Jesse's my favorite, and JR did not go well with him, so that's why I wouldn't have picked him.
Fair enough.
What do you think, Dan?
I wish they made an app in which I could put Gorilla and Jesse over every show that I watch.
That would be a hell of an app. That's what they should do with all this technology.
Yeah. I even if it's like a TNA show, an ROH show, you know, some random indie that we watched, you know, in Connecticut, whatever, or Rhode Island, I would love that app. But that would probably be my dream team, to be honest. And I think it has a lot to do with the fact that that's who I grew up with. So those were the voices of WrestleMania to me when I was growing up. So that's where I'd go.
Am I a crappy wrestling fan if mm-hmm. I've just been spending this whole time looking at old Remco action figures?
No, you're not. That's pretty awesome. I'm guessing
time is up, yes.
All right. Quickly want to talk PlaceToBeNation.com because there's a lot going on. Dan mentioned our network adventure earlier. Me, him, Chad, Jason Greenhouse, Scott Criscolo going through the entire archive, or we're going to attempt to anyway, we're nine in, of the WWE Network. We're doing it in chronological order. So we're into World Class December 2nd, 82. So you can check those out. We've done a bunch of house shows and then a bunch of WCCW shows as well. So be sure to check that. Yeah, pretty much every week that's up. Parv went a little wacky here, fair for flair, and did a five-part podcast series making the case why Ric Flair is the greatest of all time. He talks about his strategy and psychology with Marty Sleaze. He talked Ric Flair's 1992 promos by himself. He talked Ric Flair's top 20 matches with Pete. He talked Ric Flair assessing him as the greatest wrestler ever for part of the PWO project with Charles. And Will, you were on there too, arguing the merits of Ric Flair, and for somehow, I don't know why, Jerry Lawler came up. I can't understand why he would come up in that discussion.
Well, the argument was, the first four shows, it's all about praising Flair.
Yep.
And I kind of wanted to defend the Flair critics and kind of give a point of view of why they feel the way they do and why Ric Flair is not my number one wrestler of all time, and that's why Lawler showed up.
So check out that whole series. You can get it now on the PWO PTBN podcast feed or at placementnation.com. NBA teams continuing their previews before the season tips off in a couple weeks. Scott and I were back with Backlash 2005 on Monday, and a new Between the Sheets. Check that out as well, because it was a great week. October 6th to the 12th, 1997, Chris and Bix looked at the passing of Brian Pillman and how the WWF handled it, the beginnings of DX, Jim Cornette's rants on WCW, and a lot of other stuff in a very, very busy time in wrestling history. So check all that out, plus much, much more on all our podcast feeds and iTunes, Facebook.com/PlaceToBeNation as well. And don't forget, if you're buying stuff on Amazon like Will does all the time, I hope you're stopping at PlaceToBeNation.com first and you're clicking the banner and then going to Amazon, because that way you send a little bit of kickback our way to help keep this stuff up and running. So be sure to do that. And I guess we might as well plug Will as well. We'll be back recording this week. I think it'll probably air next week sometime. You, me, and Dan, the Dangerous Alliance team, joining Ben Morse for this month's PTBN Rewind series. We'll be doing Halloween Havoc 1990. So looking forward to that. Three of us and Ben. So be sure to check that out as well. And I will tell everyone to check out next week's Kevin Kelly Show for part two of an interview with Matt Stryker. Part one previewed their role with the New Japan pay-per-view. Part two, we'll talk more about Matt Stryker's career and life and how he got into wrestling and whatnot. So be sure to check those both out. All right, I think it's time for mail, and I think we're both pretty tired, Will. So what do you say, 4 minutes of mail tonight? Is that okay? I feel like we did a lot of mail-type questions with that spin the wheel thing.
Well, let's just round it off to five.
All right. You always get a push. Okay. Dan, let's fire it up.
We're going to the party. We're going to the game. We're going to the disco. And gonna cruise out, man. We're stealing people's mail. Stealing people's mail.
You've got mail.
Guys, new cover to the mailbag this week, Danish Dynamite. He writes, "Hey guys, Hogan wins AWA title and then doesn't go to New York. What's the new main event at WrestleMania 1?
All right, so this is a tough one because, you know, who's our champion? Do we have a championship match? Do we still do the celebrity thing with Mr. T? Do we even have a WrestleMania? Are we popular enough with that Hulk Hogan? Names you always hear thrown around, Jimmy Snuka, Junkyard Dog. I have a hard time seeing them stepping in that role. Do we turn Roddy Piper face? Of all these options, Will, what do we do, assuming we're still popular enough to have this show?
Well, I think that you're still going to have Roddy Piper there as the heel.
Okay,
because I think he can pull that off. As your face, Ricky Steamboat just come in, maybe be a little bit too soon.
Yeah, I think so.
Junkyard Dog was not ready. Snuka was messed up at the time. Where was Sergeant Slaughter?
He was gone, but I don't know what he was doing. It's too bad, too, with Snuka, because Snuka Piper was so hot in 84.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I think if Hogan's not there, I think Slaughter might stick it out. I think maybe Slaughter Piper.
So let's see. Slaughter return in 83. Yeah, it looks like, I mean, they wouldn't let him do the G.I. Joe line, but... at the time, his departure, Slaughter was easily the second biggest face, surpassing Jimmy Snuka and even Andre, with a popularity rivaling that of Hulk Hogan. So, yeah, I mean, yeah, he might have hung around if it was. I mean, would they have caved on the G.I. Joe stuff if he was their top guy? But what about Andre? Could we put Andre in that slot?
No, you keep Andre with Big John Studd, because that was a huge feud. I think what you do is you then go for broke, and you, instead of saving the Tito Valentine program, that you include that as one of your feature matches as well, instead of having them in jobber matches.
Yep, you could do that too.
I think Orndorff is still in the mix, so maybe you still have Orndorff up there with somebody. Maybe you could do Orndorff Snuka.
So do you like do you do anything with T, or does he not fit without Hogan?
I don't know. Well, but then again, I don't know if WrestleMania is as popular as it is without Mr. T. I think you try and get Mr. T in, but man, it's so hard to imagine WrestleMania without Hulk Hogan, right?
Yeah, right.
But let's say you get Mr. T, you absolutely pair him up with Junkyard Dog, which was a suggestion I had during WrestleMania week, where you team him up with Junkyard Dog against the evil foreigners Iron Sheik and Nikolai Volkov.
Yeah, I mean, was there any, I don't know what G.I. Joe, I mean, I was just too young at this point. Did they have anyone else real action that could have came in with Slaughter as a star, or was it all pretty, was he the only guy that was not like a straight cartoon?
No, he was the only guy. He was that was it. G.I. Joe were fictional characters.
So maybe you do a tie-in where T like does a G.I. Joe thing with Slaughter if you want to put T in the main event and still do the tag. You know what I mean? Like, if you want T in that spot.
Yeah, and then, you, like I said, I still think you do the Americans of JYD and T. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it sounds like cliche putting two black guys together, but it's not just any
it's right
black
up my
guy.
Alley, pal.
JYD was so immensely popular around this time. I think if they could have given him a handler or someone to kind of keep him a little bit clean, that it could have been pulled off. I think T and JYD would have been a really fun team against Volkov and Sheik.
All right, Dan, we probably got time for one more here. What do we got?
One more. Charles with some hard-hitting questions here, guys. If 1985 Ric Flair is working a house show in a dry county, how does he spend his evening? He follows this up by asking, what do you think Randy Savage's preferred brand of peanut butter is?
Okay, so I think Flair smuggles alcohol in and then it brings like a hooker back to the room and gets bombed in his room and bangs her. I mean, that's my guess. And maybe he watches some porn. I mean, that's...
Well, it's Ric Flair. He doesn't need a hooker.
Right. So he brings some... Yeah, all right. So he brings some chick back that he finds. But there's no bar for him to find her in. So it's either going to be a groupie at the arena.
Yeah, it's definitely a rat at the arena. He's probably got Arn there picking them up for him, okay, driving the rats around. Then he convinces another rat to go to the wet county next to the dry county, go get the liquor, bring it back, smuggle it back into the dry county, and then have a big party in the hotel room. As far as the peanut butter, it's a little bit more difficult.
He's a crunchy,
because
I'll say that.
Is he crunchy, or yes. is he smooth?
He's smooth and creamy.
I don't know. And is he going Peter Pan or is he going Jif?
Or Skippy.
Or Skippy, man. Well, I think, you know what? I'm going to say that Randy Savage is an Annette Funicello guy. And so whatever peanut butter she was promoting in the 80s, that's the one.
Okay. I don't think we're going to top that. So why don't we go ahead and wrap up this
Well,
week?
Hold on. Let's find out. I'm typing in right now, Annette Funicello peanut butter, and she was a Skippy promoter.
There you go, Skippy it is. And it kind of fits with Lanny Poffo, used to skip around the ring when he was a genius, so we'll go with that. Randy Savage.
Well, I don't think Randy Savage, with his immense jealousy and insecurity, is going to share Annette Funicello with Randy Poffo.
Let's put this one to bed. Let's wrap things up. So here's the deal. We got a lot going on scheduling wise over the next couple weeks, so we will not be back for a month. We're going to skip what normally would be our bi-weekly period. So you take a break from the Dangerous Alliance. We'll be back on, let's see here what the date will be. November 11th we'll be back. Wednesday, November 11th will be our next episode. So we'll be gearing up for Thanksgiving. We'll be having some, a lot of November fun, I'm sure. Thanksgiving, Survivor Series.
Probably building a Starrcade card or two.
Yeah, maybe some Survivor Series too. Our Ultimate Survivor Series teams we could do. So a lot we can talk about. We'll save that for then. So everyone, enjoy your month. Be sure to check out all the other shows on both feeds. Plenty to listen to you, for you to listen to during this time off. And you get your fill of us anyway during that week where we'd normally be off, because we'll be talking Halloween Havoc 1990 with Ben Moore. So be sure to check that out too. So for Will and Dan, I'm JT. We'll talk to you later. Take care.
It's a full moon on the Sabbath.
This is scary.
Break it down.
I was working late on my half Torah when I heard a knock on my bedroom door. I opened it up, and to my surprise, there was a werewolf standing there with glowing gold eyes. He says, "Tomorrow, my son, you will be a man. But tonight's the time to join the Wolfen Clan. Tomorrow you will stand at the beamer and pray. But tonight, let's gaze at the moon and bathe. Werewolf for mitzvah, spooky, scary. Wolves becoming men, men becoming wolves. Werewolf for mitzvah, spooky, scary. Wolves becoming men, men becoming wolves."
All right, that was great, Trey. Okay, it's over. That's a wrap.
Oh. The next day, what happened? The Toma didn't teach.
Oh, this man.
I got up in front of everyone to give my little speech. Then my teeth turned into fangs and my nails into claws. And I nearly dropped the Torah when my hands turned into paws. I growled and I roared and my rabbi did as well. It was a rocking werewolf zoo at Temple Beth Emmanuel.
Hey man, where'd you learn all these Jewish words?
My manager, Harvey Lemmings. Werewolf bar mitzvah, spooky, scary. Boys becoming men, men becoming wolves.
I just don't think the idea of the song can sustain itself for that long. It seems a little sweaty now, so.
This whole premise is sweaty. We had a reception at the Larchmont Country Club. They served a real nice brisket and an 8-foot party sub. I danced with my cousins, I got money from my folks. Had a lot of fun making circumcision jokes. Then I remembered the premise of my song. I was at a nice reception, but the werewolf part was gone. So we pulled ourselves together and we're wolfmen again. Just in time for monster fight to begin.
No.
All the country club employees were brain-sucking packed. Who had all turned into zombies and were on the attack.
No.
So we fought them and some Draculas and Frankensteins too. Cause you gotta love bar mitzvah even if you're not a...
There's no such thing as Frankensteins.
Werewolf bar mitzvah, spooky, scary.
No plural.
Boys becoming men, men becoming wolves. Werewolf bar mitzvah, kooky, hairy. Boys becoming men. Men becoming wolves.
I don't want this. I don't like this. This is scary. Turning into werewolves and stuff. You know? I don't know, Trey. I'm not feeling it. This ain't no dick in a box. Mazel tov.